Chapter 58. Breaking Camp. In February 1984, I resigned from the Darling Downs Institute of Advanced Education in Toowoomba, Queensland. I'd thoroughly enjoyed aspects of my time there, particularly the students and teaching textiles. But I found the politics of the institution unfathomable, possibly because I was accustomed to being a one-woman band. Some months earlier, I decided to visit the Findhorn community in northern Scotland. I'd written the obligatory introduction letter, outlining my skills and reasons for wanting to visit, after which I waited impatiently for a reply. When the letter arrived inviting me to come, I swung into action. I knew the most pressing matter to be dealt with before I could leave Australia was severing my connection with my former partner in Goulburn. But before I left Toowoomba, I had things to do. Firstly, I gifted the wherewithal to continue producing the Australiana range of screen-printed items to one of my mature-age students, because I knew she'd produce a quality product. And secondly, to rehouse Sass the Wonder Dog. After finding a loving home for him, followed by numerous farewell gatherings, I broke camp and headed south to Goulburn to deal with Peter, who'd been living in my house whilst I was in Toowoomba. He knew I was off to Scotland after selling my house. Sniffing a bargain, he had a real estate maid visit me. After running down the property, he offered me $56,000. I was extremely annoyed and refused his offer. Peter was also annoyed and proved difficult to dislodge. Understandable, as he'd lived rent-free for close to 5 years. An undischarged bankrupt, his nastiness was writ large when he threatened to lodge a caveat over my house, his attempt to either gain financially or to drag out the disentanglement process, or both. Discombobulated, I engaged a hotshot Sydney lawyer who worked his legal magic. And within a week, Peter was gone. Once back in the house, I began the long overdue 7-day kitchen renovation before putting the house on the market. A Goulburn friend, while aware of the eviction drama and the pressure I was under to fix the kitchen before putting the house on the market, found an advertisement in the local paper. Being a strike while the iron's hot type person, she phoned me to say that someone was looking for a house, just like mine, with a budget of up to $75,000. She instructed me to jot down the telephone number and call immediately. I thanked her, and for the umpteenth time explained that I wanted to finish the kitchen renovation before looking for a buyer. After hanging up, I looked at the number and thought, I've been given this number for a reason. Even though I'm not yet ready to sell, I'd best phone. I phoned, introduced myself to the male voice at the other end, and went on to describe my 1400 square meter property in detail. I explained that it'd be ready for inspection in a week's time. But the voice would have none of it, insisting on visiting at 9 o'clock the next morning, and I reluctantly agreed. Next morning, the voice and his wife arrived on the dot of 9, and by 9:30, the house was sold for $72,000, $3,000 shy of their top price. I decided to drop the price to cover the cost of new floor coverings, as the old carpet and bare floorboards made the rooms difficult to heat in the winter. As it was a cash sale with 4 weeks to settle, I had time to complete the kitchen renovation and move on to the next task, to organize a massive weekend garage sale. Everything had to go. My mother came to help. I made a series of long low display tables from wooden planks and bricks, spaced out across the floor of the now almost empty studio. I then spent days systematically pricing everything before arranging each item on the plank tables in readiness. To advertise the garage sale, I organized a leaving town article in the local paper, placed an ad on local radio, and nailed up large signs on both sides of the two telegraph poles closest to the front gate. I was a little concerned, because I didn't know how the Goulburn community would respond to a garage sale, because they were a newish phenomenon in regional Australia, at that time. But I quickly discovered there was absolutely no need for concern. On Saturday morning at 9 o'clock, the floodgates opened. My mother was in charge of the money. I found a large deep biscuit tin, with a tight-fitting lid for the cash box, and I recall seeing the tin bulging with money, time and time again. I lost count of the number of times the tin had to be emptied in the course of the two-day sale. In the flurry of activity that was created by a constant flow of people through the studio and the grounds, one incident remains with me. My mother found me to say that she'd noticed a woman walking down to the front gate clutching a number of white leather skins. She watched the woman get into a Mercedes-Benz and drive away. My mother was convinced the woman hadn't paid for the skins, but there was nothing we could do. Early next morning, we were mightily surprised when the woman returned with cash in hand, to pay for the skins. We assumed that either she'd forgotten to pay on the day, or her conscience had gotten the better of her overnight. The garage sale was a huge success, with very little left by Sunday afternoon. Only a queen-size bed, and some cans of paint that were stored in one of the chook pens, on the western boundary. The paint was not included in the mega sale, because I'd simply run out of puff. Fortunately, an ex-New Guinea artist friend, who had relocated to nearby Mittagong, was invited to inspect what was left. Next day, he and his family drove to Goulburn, to check out their unexpected windfall. They took the lot, and we helped them fill their trailer to the top, before heading home. When the house sale was finalized, I gave the new owners the photo album I'd begun in early 1979, shortly after we'd moved in. It contained a visual record of the improvements made to the house and studio over almost 5 years. The improvements included a new L-shaped front veranda, offshot edge jarrah, 2 fully renovated bathrooms, 2 new loos, gas hot water throughout, relocation of the back door, and 2 full-length sash windows, bricked into a section of the north-facing dining room wall. Freshly painted throughout, with a newly painted roof, and a very recently renovated kitchen. The house sale marked the end of my dealings with the hotshot lawyer. He was delighted to take some of the artworks from the Wollongong exhibition, in part payment for his legal services. No sooner had I delivered the pieces to his Sydney office, he gave them pride of place in the waiting room. A light draft created by the ducted air conditioning made the work move gently, thereby adding another dimension to the otherwise static artworks. His final suggestion was to invest the profit from the house sale in government bonds, that were paying 17%. Lovely. I was now able to relax, and enjoy my hard-won freedom. Before leaving for Scotland, I'd time for a short romantic dalliance with a lawyer friend of the hotshot lawyer, after which I packed my suitcase, farewelled friends, and flew out to London. On reflection. The Goulburn Garage Sale. The success of my mega sale can be attributed to the novelty of garage sales at that time, a trendy new way of offloading unwanted possessions. Mine was widely publicised, and the townsfolk of Goulburn came in droves, possibly to check out the house, the studio and the garden. Their interest was piqued as the result of my highish profile in the community, the flow on from my 11-month residency at the Goulburn College, in 1980. What I liked most about garage sales was that people paid good money to take away stuff I no longer wanted. The new owners. The couple who bought my house had well-paying jobs in Goulburn. She was a nurse at the Goulburn Hospital, and he was a warder at Goulburn's maximum security prison. Some years later, I heard that he'd taken a strong stand against drugs in the jail. For his trouble, to use prison parlance, a disgruntled prisoner had rearranged his face with a metal bar. Not long after, they sold the house and moved away. Nest building. The Goulburn house was my second and final attempt at nest building around a relationship with a man, this time with Peter Bluey. My first attempt was with Charlie Smith, in Sydney, when we were both just 21, and wet behind the ears. But my Goulburn adventure, and the relationship that went with it, was the last straw. In the intervening years, I've come to realize I'm happiest on my own. I've discovered that in romantic relationships, I ever so gradually lose myself, whilst endeavoring to be the perfect partner, loving, understanding, supportive, and forgiving, often choosing to overlook my partner's indiscretions. When my best efforts were not enough, I'd pull away and become resentful. Facts. The proceeds of the garage sale. After expenses, I made over $5,000, which was a lot of money in 1984.